This contains Bishop John W. Howe's second message in his mini-series called All I Want for Christmas. This message is entitled, What Do You Want to Give for Christmas?
I asked you last week, if I gave you everything you wanted, who do you think I'd be? And the answer was, it depends a very large extent upon what it is you want. What do you want? I have another question today. What do you want to give? What do you want to give? I assume you do want to give. It's not just a matter of responding to all of that social pressure. What do you want to give? If you could give anything, what would you give? There's so many funny scenes at Christmas time and so many sort of misdirected or not quite on target presents. I don't know if you laugh about it the way we do. I love it when a wife gives her husband a book with the words, let me know when you finished it, I'm dying to read it. You know, don't you love that one? You can tell how often that's happened at our house. Or the husband gives the wife a great present, a trash masher, you know, so that he doesn't have to carry the garbage out so often. That also has happened at our house. What a great gift. You know, the only machine that will turn 25 pounds of garbage into 25 pounds of garbage. Sometimes there's a poignancy in gift giving. How many of you know O. Henry's Gift of the Magi? You know, the remarkable little story. The wife with long, beautiful, long hair that she has cultivated for years sells her hair to a wig maker so that she can buy a beautiful watch fob for her husband. Meantime, he sells his watch to buy her combs for her hair. Funny and yet touchingly poignant, painful. And there's another level of irony to the whole story when you know that O. Henry dashed that off in a drunken stupor simply so he could get more money to buy more booze. What do you want to give for Christmas? When Karen and I became parents, we made a decision that I've never really regretted. I don't know if you would agree with it, but it seemed right for us and for our family that we would never tell our kids the secular stories that have been overlaid on the great Christian festivals. For us, for our family, there wouldn't be Santa Claus and Easter Bunny. There would be the celebration of the birth of Jesus, the celebration of his death and resurrection. The reason being, we never wanted our kids, as they grew up, to come to the point of saying, Mom and Dad, you told us fairy tales when we were little about Santa Claus, and maybe it was only fairy tales that you told us about Jesus. We wanted to draw a very clear line between the truth and the fairy tales. So we didn't take great pains to deny those stories, but we simply didn't tell them. We told them the true stories. I regretted that for one moment. When Kathy was about five, she went with me to a neighborhood program that we were putting on for some handicapped kids, and they brought in a Santa Claus. And Kathy knew perfectly well that it was simply one of the other ministers in town with a pillow strapped around his waist. She knew what was going on, but she saw all these little kids lining up to speak to Santa, and she said, I'm going to speak to Santa. It was the first time in her life where I said, honey, it's time to go. She said, no! And she went and spoke to Santa. Santa is all entwined with this story, isn't he? Santa, the great symbol of gift giving. I wonder if any of you know the real story about Santa. There is one. And I wanted to tell you a little bit about it. The jolly old elf is known all over the world by a variety of names. Sinterklaas, San Nicola, Hell's Nickel. Don't you love that one? Klaus. Sammy Claus. Father Christmas, Old Saint Nick, Saint Nicholas, and of course Santa Claus. The man behind the legends was a man named Nicholas of Myra, who became a bishop of the Christian Church. He was born in Patras, southern Turkey, and somewhere around 280 AD, fairly early into Christian history. Superstition, legend, and incredible exaggeration have all been woven into the story, and it keeps getting added to. But behind all of that, there was a real man with a heart of great compassion and an extraordinary anointing on his life. 21 miracles were attributed to him. And some of them utterly fantastic, but with enough credibility in most of the stories that by the 9th century he was officially canonized by the Roman Catholic Church as a saint, and over the next 800 years he was easily the most popular of all of the saints in Roman Catholicism. And what I find most intriguing about all that is that it wasn't primarily the miracles for which he was known and for which he was loved, but it was for his heart of generosity. The best known tale is that of three unmarried young daughters of an impoverished nobleman who lived in a small town on the coast of Turkey, and they couldn't attract husbands because their father couldn't pay the dowry. And so late one night, Nicholas came by and dropped off a little bag of gold at the window of the eldest daughter. And she could afford then to be married, and after she was, he returned with a second bag and eventually with a third. Presents for others, given anonymously out of love for Jesus, is at the heart of this story. And you might say, well, if it was anonymously, how do we know it was Nicholas? And the answer is the nobleman found out who it was. And thus he became publicly honored and, among other things, was the patron saint of unmarried women. Some of you may want to keep that in mind. Does anybody recognize a contemporary symbol in the three bags of gold? The pawn shop. Or banking, the three gold balls that are everywhere associated with the exchange of money. Nicholas is the patron saint of many bankers. He is said to have studied in Alexandria, Egypt as a young man, and on one of his voyages there he saved the life of a young sailor who fell from the ship's rigging during a storm, and thus he became the patron saint of sailors. He is reputed to have brought back to life three young boys who were murdered by an innkeeper, thus becoming the patron saint of schoolboys. And out of various adventures, he has been revered as a patron saint of travelers, of bakers, and various others. It was while he was visiting the Turkish town of Myra that he literally walked into the fulfillment of a prophecy. He went to the local church to give thanks for safe travel, not knowing that the elders had been involved in an episcopal election. They had been voting on who the next bishop was going to be. And it went on and on. Some of you can identify with that. It went on and on with no election. They kept disbanding and coming back together, and one night one of them had a dream. An extraordinary dream. The dream was that God was sending them their next bishop, and his name was Nicholas. The word Nicholas, the name Nicholas, by the way, means victorious. God was sending one who would be his victorious choice. And he came back and he shared this dream with the others, and they agreed that the next man named Nicholas who came to their church was God's choice. And immediately after that, in walks Nicholas. Now, before you dismiss that as being another fairy tale, just remember that in that first Christmas story, God spoke through dreams, gave the name of someone rather important through a dream, directed wise men through dreams in the courses they should take, spared them from disaster at the hands of Herod through dreams. God does sometimes do that. And that's the story behind Nicholas. He was God's appointed one by divine choice, by supernatural dream and prophecy. Nicholas became the bishop of Myra and in the process the patron saint of all those elected to the episcopacy on the 13th ballot. He died around 345 AD and he was buried at the church in Myra, which quickly became the destination for pilgrimages from all over the Near East. Christians came to visit that site and they reported literally hundreds of miracles, healings, and other miracles taking place at the site of his grave. When the Islamic waves began to sweep through the Holy Land areas and nearby, Nicholas' bones were moved to the southern coast of Italy. Legends continued to grow. And during the period from the 11th to the 17th centuries, more than 1,200 churches were dedicated in his name. It was during that time that the custom developed of giving presents to children in the name of Saint Nicholas. And this is the conclusion that I want to draw from all of that. Isn't it ironic? Isn't it interesting? Isn't it encouraging that this man who wanted to give presents anonymously has ended up getting the credit for hundreds of millions of presents others have given in his name? God notices what we do, doesn't he? Every culture has its own traditions. In Germany, youngsters would dress up in bishops' garments and go around begging alms for the poor. In Holland, children would put their wooden shoes outside of the door. Probably you've heard of that one, putting their shoes outside of the door, hoping that St. Nicholas would come by and leave some candy or other presents in them. It was only about 300 years ago that the British moved the celebration of St. Nicholas Day from December 6th to make it coincide with Christmas. In 1822, an Episcopal priest by the name of Clement C. Moore wrote a poem that he called A Visit from St. Nicholas. You know it as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. I could go on and on. It has been added to and added to. The idea that he lives at the North Pole was woven into the story only after Admiral Perry actually got there in 1909. Coca-Cola commissioned their first and still most popular portrait of St. Nicholas of Santa in 1931. Rudolph was invented in 1939, and so on. Has it been commercialized? Of course. Probably more than any other story, except the larger one of which it's a part. But I wonder if having just a little feel for that background might help you and me cope with some of those commercial kinds of pressures on us at this time of year. Behind all of the tinsel and the glitter and the advertising and the hype and the pressure and the commercialism, behind all of that was a simple Christian willing to be obedient to the Lord even in an extraordinary call that he hadn't known anything about till he walked through the doors. Didn't seek it, didn't run for an election, but was willing to do what God told him, who had a heart of generosity, who out of compassion wanted to give to others in the name of Christ, and who did it so well that 1,700 years later, we're still celebrating him as part of the celebration of his Lord's birthday. Not a bad legacy, that. I urge you to think of the real Saint Nicholas as we come closer to his day and Christ's. And may the Spirit that touched his heart touch ours. May it touch yours as you seek to answer or fulfill the sentence, "All I want to give for Christmas is..."